Welcome to the Perry Johnson Registrars Podcast, where you can expect the latest news and discussions related to the management systems certification industry. Today's episode is a previously recorded webinar. If you would like to tune in to our upcoming webinars, visit our website at www.pjr.com/webinar or give us a follow on your favorite podcast app. Thank you for tuning in.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to today's webinar, which is an overview of 13485-2016 with a focus on the most common NCRs that we're seeing in ISO 13485 audits. My name is Shannon Craddock, and I'm the Programs and Accreditations Manager here at PJR. So what will we be talking about today? First, we're going to talk about the scope and importance of ISO 13485 certification. On the front end of things at PJR, we often get inquiries from applicants, and they're better suited to ISO 9001 as opposed to 13485. 13485 is a much more comprehensive and costly undertaking, so you want to make sure that the product you're supplying, the service you're supplying, truly meets the definition of and the scope of 13485. We're then going to talk about the most common reasons an organization is deemed not ready to proceed after stage one, and then the most common nonconformities that we're seeing during stage two, surveillance, and recertification audits. And it's here when I talk about these most common nonconformities that we'll actually get into some of the requirements of the standard. And as we enter almost the 18, 19, 20 month mark of the pandemic, at least here in the United States, we'll talk about the COVID-19 pandemic and how it has impacted 13485 audits and what I see regarding the future of remote auditing when it comes to 13485 audits from 2022 and beyond. Okay, so let's talk about what types of companies should be pursuing 13485 certification. So I pulled from the standard itself, Section 1 scope, the set of requirements. 1345 is a set of requirements for a QMS where an organization needs to demonstrate its ability to provide medical devices and related services that meet customer and applicable regulatory requirements. Now, these organizations can be involved in any stage in the life cycle of the process, from design and development and production, which are obvious, but also storage of medical devices, distribution of medical devices, installation and servicing of a medical device, whether it's brought into the organization or technicians go out to a physician's office or a hospital, or provision of associated activities such as technical support. The standard can be used by suppliers or external parties that provide the product, including quality management system related services to such organizations. So this may be an organization providing sterilization or sanitization services, or perhaps even consulting services. And I think when we talk about the pandemic, 13485 has become much more important since March 2020. Many organizations are looking to diversify their manufacturing. So we've seen a lot of organizations that were making different types of products suddenly get into making PPE of various types. Personal protective equipment. There's a huge demand for medical device manufacturing, and oftentimes more than for other sectors. So if we have a company that's certified to ISO 9001 dealing in textiles, you're going to see that there are a number of similarities between that standard and 13485. Certainly there are some deltas above and beyond the 9001 requirements, but it can be a logical, orderly transition to this more complex standard. Okay, so let's talk about some of the most common stage one failures that's going to lead an organization to be deemed not ready to proceed to stage two. Okay, so before we even get started, poor planning is going to lead to a decision of not ready to proceed after the stage one. So the audit itself, that stage one audit, hasn't even started yet. We're at the scheduling stage. And the mistake is made that there's not enough time scheduled between the stage one and the stage two. So it's not giving the auditee sufficient time to address any stage one concerns prior to the stage two. The way to mitigate this is to allow a minimum of 6 weeks, but not more than 90 days between a stage one and a stage two audit. So you're going to see as we go through, there's a lot of documentation requirements for 1345 that you don't see in 9001 or other standards, even aerospace and IATF, for the aerospace and automotive industries. A lot of procedural requirements still, a lot of requirements for documented processes. And sometimes an organization that upgrades from 9001 is caught off guard. A minimum of 6 weeks between stage one and stage two will allow sufficient time to fine-tune or create new documentation. Now, there have been cases during this pandemic where we'll allow more than 90 days between the stage one and the stage two. Certainly contact your scheduler at TJR, discuss your unique circumstance, and in almost all cases, we'll allow additional time between the stage one and stage two. That time interval, however, cannot exceed 6 months. So most stage one audits, whether they're conducted in person or even if they're conducted remotely, will start with a facility tour. So for remote audits, that's typically somebody walking around with a cell phone or iPad or tablet and showing the auditor their facility. So sometimes what we'll see is on the facility tour, poor identification and traceability of components and finished products. And this isn't really something that we look at during a stage one. This is really a stage two issue. But if the issue is so pervasive that we're noticing it on the site tour and we're really not even digging in, this kind of sets the tone that the client is not really prepared for the stage two. Another thing that we see is that multiple companies are sharing a space, and there's no clear delineation what manufacturing meets the definition of 1345 is related to medical devices and what's not. So scoping and boundaries are very important. Certainly, multiple companies can share a space. We are definitely not trying to tell you how to run your business. But the boundaries of the medical device management system, both the physical, that namely here is physical boundaries, have to be clear. The certificate issued by PGR will be clear. So if there's more than one company, more than one company name, the certificate issued by PGR will very clearly state the company that is doing the medical device manufacturing. Okay, another probably most common reason an organization is deemed not ready to proceed to stage two is not all the management system pillars are in place. And the most common thing is that not all of the required procedures are documented. So I've prepared a list of all the documentation requirements for 1345. Some of these you're going to see are very similar to ISO 9001 and its derivative standards. Control of documents, control of records, management review, human resources, explicit call out for a procedure there, infrastructure, maintenance, what working conditions are required, the work environment, contamination control is applicable, design and development. Design and development transfer, design and development changes. And some of these requirements are even applicable if you aren't the legal manufacturer of the device and are designing the device. You still need some documentation relative to design changes and transfer. Purchasing. Requirement for production control procedures, cleanliness and contamination control. You need documentation if you do installation activities. If you provide servicing, you need a procedure for that. Procedures for validation of processes, including software. Validation of processes for sterilization, or if there's a sterile barrier system in place. And then procedures for identification, traceability, and product preservation. And that list continues. So as you can see, the documentation requirements for 1345 are considerable. And in the 2015 release of many standards, or 2016 release of some of the 9001 based standards, you saw that a lot of those procedural requirements went away. This is not the case with 1345. Explicit call out for procedure for monitoring and measurement equipment. A procedure for how you handle feedback, a procedure for complaint handling. This is a really important procedure under 1345. A procedure for understanding when you need to report to regulatory authorities and how you report. Internal auditing, control of non-conforming product. Procedure for how to issue an advisory notice if so required. Procedures for rework, analysis of data, and CA and PA. So as I had stated before, there are many more procedures than in 9001 or 9001 based standards. We'll also see that sometimes an organization may not have implemented all required processes. So there are multiple callouts in the standard where the organization has to establish a process. Doesn't necessarily mean that this process is documented. If it's documented, it makes it easier to audit, but definitely not a requirement to document it if not stated as such. Auditors then have to establish if the procedure is maintained. And they'll often talk to numerous people performing that procedure who are responsible for that procedure and make sure the descriptions of the application of the process are consistent. Another reason that may result in an inability to proceed to the stage two is that the organization has no quality objectives or poor quality objectives, or they have those objectives, but really limited data available for analysis to show the system is trending in the right direction. Also, to show that if a target is not met, the organization knows how to react. A lack of commitment. Auditors can typically sense very early on from the opening meeting top management team is not committed to the 1345 standard. Okay, let's take a look now at the most common nonconformities written during stage two surveillance and recertification audit. So we often see issues with the quality manual, and ideally these will come up in the stage one as well, but in proper scope, declaring not applicable when it's not allowed. So you can't, even if you are not the legal manufacturer who's designing the device, there's certain part of the design requirements that you cannot exclude, or your scope is not clear. When we read that scope, we need to understand the type of medical device you're making, whether it's a finished device, a component part, or a service that's being provided. We also see that organizations struggle with the application of regulatory requirements. In the United States, this is 21 CFR Part 820, and organizations need to go through this document and identify, implement, and then maintain all of these requirements. So keep in mind that regulatory requirements are applicable for component and contract manufacturers, certainly not all of them, but you need to understand what it is that you're doing and how the regulatory requirements are involved in your management system. We often see this MCR related to software validation. And depending on its purpose within the organization, this software validation requirement may include off-the-shelf software such as Microsoft Excel. So if it's used in your manufacturing process, for example, or to tabulate data in your management system, it needs to be validated prior to use and then after any changes to the software or how it's being used. We also see nonconformities related to purchasing. So suppliers need to be controlled based on risk. So organizations need to develop criteria for evaluating and selecting suppliers. And these criteria need to be proportionate to the risk associated with the medical device. So a component part manufacturer certainly will have more stringent criteria than a supplier who is not providing a component part to a medical device. Service providers also need to be included in this scope. So if they provide a secondary or finishing service, maybe a part out for an electroplating process or a finishing service, you need to have criteria to evaluate those suppliers. If products are tested in third-party laboratories, what are the unique requirements for those laboratories? 17025 accreditation, perhaps. 15189 accreditation. Sterilization service providers are also included. They're not just people providing a tangible component part, but those providing services need to be included in the scope. Criteria need to be developed for their evaluation and selection. And again, these criteria are based on risk. We'll also see nonconformities related to shelf life. So we need to make sure that their stock rotation is appropriate. Product that's expired is appropriately removed so it can't be shipped to a customer. It can't be incorporated into the manufacturing process. Preservation requirements may apply to constituent parts of a medical device and not just the finished device. Auditors and clients need to be aware that preservation can be accomplished through packaging and shipping containers. So is the packaging and shipping appropriate to the type of device that's being sent out? And an organization has to document requirements for any special conditions if packaging alone is not sufficient. And these conditions shall be controlled and recorded to ensure that they're consistently met. See, a lot of nonconformities related to identification and traceability in the production process. So first, there is the requirement that I already stated for a documented procedure. Product identification of specifically of product status has to be maintained throughout production, storage, installation, and servicing to ensure that only product that is passed required inspection and test is released on authorized concession. And if required by the applicable regulatory requirements, the organization may need to assign a unique identification to the medical device. So we'll often see this, for example, with pacemakers or breast implants, so that if there is a recall situation, all impacted devices can be recalled. If a device is returned by a customer for any reason, these need to be distinguished from product that is conforming. Okay, circling back a little bit earlier in the life cycle of the manufacturing process, the requirements for the product need to be defined and documented. When product requirements are changed, relevant documents need to be amended and relevant personnel need to be made aware of change requirements. So if a part print is changed, what's the process for ensuring that the part print gets cascaded to all relevant people in the organization and outside of the organization if appropriate? There are some requirements related to customer complaints and timeliness. These requirements are fairly straightforward, but they're rather strict. Timeliness is key when responding to complaints or other corrective action requests. So your customer, regulatory agencies may stipulate timelines for responding to customer complaints. Our auditors are looking to make sure that these are consistently met. Issues with document control are fairly similar to what we see in ISO 9001 audits. Uncontrolled documents not out on the floor, or the correct version of controlled documents are not out on the manufacturing floor as appropriate, whether hard copy or electronic. People using the wrong versions of documents. Electronic document users accessing documents from their personal drive rather than the controlled database or directory. Okay, let's chat a little bit about conducting 1345 audits during the pandemic. So we have been doing stage one audits virtually and really through most of 2021 had been doing a lot of the stage twos virtually as well. Also with surveillance and recertification audits. We're all hopeful that the pandemic becomes at minimum an endemic and will return to more normalcy than we're currently seeing. I believe that there's a tremendous benefit from face-to-face interaction with clients, especially if an auditor has never been on site at the client before. I always say the auditor doesn't know what they're not seeing. As we get into surveillance and recertification mode, however, I believe that a portion of every audit can be virtual. There are many times during management system audits where administrative portions of the management system are being audited, and the auditee and the auditor are sitting in a conference room looking at a shared screen together anyway. Auditors can certainly do that from home, improving auditor quality of life and saving clients money in terms of travel, hotel, per diem, and rental costs. But again, all of this is based on risk. So we'll be looking at the status of the pandemic in your geographic area, any travel restrictions, if the auditor's coming from a high-risk area, but you may not necessarily be in a high-risk area. As well as the risk of what you're doing. If you're making a very simple component part, that's very different than if you're the design responsible legal manufacturer of a sterile implantable medical device. And all those factors will be considered. Okay, that's all I have in terms of today's prepared content. I'll now open the floor to any questions. Okay, starting to see some questions come in, bear with me. Yeah, it appears people thought I was saying 1345. Yeah, the standard is 13485. I apologize if I was cutting out. Okay, getting a question about authorized concession, who's required to authorize? That would be the customer. So if you're in a situation where you need to release a product on concession, Thomas, the person or the entity from whom you would be getting that permission would be your customer. A lot of comments about how you can download the PowerPoint and access the recording. And again, this will be available on our website, www.pjr.com, in about 24 to 48 hours from the conclusion of today's webinar. I have a question from Iman Eshra. Iman, your question isn't clear. I believe it relates to outsourcing. Outsourcing NC, I'm not sure what you mean by that. If you could clarify, I'll gladly answer your question. Great question from Erica. Can you give us an example of a software validation for over-the-counter software? Certainly, Erica. A lot of times you can purchase software programs for SPC used out on the manufacturing floor. You can purchase a software program for device calibration, a gauge tracker program, or something like that. The use of a software program when gathering data for statistical process control or gathering data for gauge calibration validation certainly impact the management system. So those are examples of two off-the-shelf software programs that would need to be validated for your purposes. Excel could be another example. It would depend on how you were using Excel. We certainly would not be concerned if you were using Excel in the accounting department, but if you're using Excel for another purpose as it relates to the life cycle of the medical device, we would want to see that even an off-the-shelf program like Microsoft Excel was validated for your purpose. Okay, Erica's clarifying. How is that validated? Let me give you an example, Erica, that is kind of outside of the context of this. When we calculate audit time at PJR for 1345, we use an Excel spreadsheet. And the audit time that we quote is based on an IAF mandatory document. And as your employee count increases, the audit time increases. So we discovered an issue with our Excel spreadsheet that it was calculating audit time appropriately the lower employee count ranges and not necessarily the higher employee count ranges. So by testing the software across the range of employee count ranges, we were able to validate and ensure that it was working appropriately. Entering dummy data into a program and making sure you were getting the desired results would be another example in a manufacturing environment. Okay, question, and I'm going to read this particular question directly. Can you speak to the role relevance of 21 CFR Part 820? I've read that ISO 13485 had become the FDA's mandatory QMS in 2019. If you're certified to 13485, what do you need to do 21 CFR Part 820 to ensure compliance? So if you choose to, you can certainly make a business decision to certify your management system to 13485. Your customers may require this. If you want to be approved by the FDA, you also have to meet regulatory requirements. Most management system standards, in fact, I struggle to think of one that does not, have a requirement that you as an organization, as part of a sound management system, understand all the other requirements that you have to comply with. And when it comes to medical devices, there are stringent regulatory requirements, 21 CFR Part 820. So you need to do both in order to be 13485 certified. If you were in looking for certification to ISO 14001, the environmental management system, it's a requirement that you understand all the environmental legislation you need to comply with. This is no different. Wait a few minutes to see if any other questions come in. Folks, I'm glad to answer any questions about the 1345 standard or remote audits during the pandemic. There's a clarifying question on the one that was just asked. So you proactively certify to ISO 1345, but also ensure that you follow 21 CFR Part 820 regulations, since the company can't get certified to 21 CFR Part 820. Certainly, that's one way to look at it, Thomas. 1345 is a voluntary certification, but once you make that business decision, you have to comply with all the regulatory requirements that go along with it. And in the medical device arena, those are 21 CFR Part 820. Now, our auditors aren't going to audit all of those requirements to ensure that you're meeting them. We're not compliance auditors. We're management system auditors, but we're going to assess your system to make sure that you have a robust way of understanding that you meet them. How did you go about understanding which requirements apply to your organization based on what you do? How did you become competent in these requirements? How do you ensure you continually meet them? Do you include them in your internal audit, for example? Getting a great question. How critical is supplier audits for certification? Well, depending on what that supplier is providing for you, those audits may be very critical. In terms of qualifying new suppliers, if they're a critical contract manufacturer, I would expect that you are flowing down some requirements relative to certification, right of access to their facility at any time, the ability for you to come in and do supplier audits. I would say that that's very important depending on the risk associated with that outsourced manufacturer or supplier. Wait one more minute to see if we have any other questions. Okay, folks, that appears to be it in terms of questions. I thank you for your time today. And just a reminder, today's slides and a recording of today's webinar will be available at pgr.com within 24 to 48 hours. Thank you. Have a great day.